To International Edition on the Voice of America. In today's show, Afghanistan's top leaders open a dialogue with U.S. officials near Washington on how to confront the threat of Islamic State militants. We'll have an update on a new candidate in the U.S. presidential election, and we'll look at how Guinea is coping 1 year after the start of the Ebola outbreak. I'm Michael Lippin. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani and Chief Executive Abdullah Abdullah have begun talks with U.S. officials at the U.S. presidential retreat in Camp David, Maryland. At the start of Monday's meeting, Mr. Ghani thanked the United States for giving Afghanistan freedom and hope after the U.S.-led 2001 invasion that ousted the country's Islamist Taliban militants from power. The Afghan president also said it is time for his nation to reciprocate those generous gifts from the United States, as he called them.
Reciprocating the gift means owning our problems, solving them, and asking of ourselves what we must do for ourselves and for the region.
Well, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who is hosting the Camp David talks, said the two sides would spend a quiet, thoughtful day in an atmosphere of open discussion to talk about Afghanistan's ongoing transition to democracy. Well, high on the agenda of the discussions is the pace of the withdrawal of the remaining 9,800 American troops in Afghanistan. Late Sunday, Mr. Ghani gave an exclusive interview to VOA's Afghan service in Washington, saying that he has asked the United States to reevaluate the pace of that withdrawal because of the recent security challenges in the region. He said those challenges include the rise of the Islamic State militant group and the Pakistani government's military offensive against Islamic militants in the north and south Waziristan tribal areas that border Afghanistan. U.S. President Barack Obama is calling for free and fair elections in Nigeria this Saturday and for Nigerians to reject the violence that has marred the country's previous polls. In a video released Monday by the U.S. Embassy in Abuja, President Obama said successful elections are the key to stopping insurgent group Boko Haram and allowing more than 1 million displaced Nigerians to return to their homes. VOA's Peter Claudy is in the Nigerian city of Lagos and asked the parties of the country's two main presidential candidates what they think of Mr. Obama's statement.
When I spoke with them earlier today, they all referred me to an agreement that both President Goodluck Jonathan, the incumbent, and the opposition leader, General Retired Muhammadu Buhari, signed a few weeks back, promising to ensure that their supporters do not engage in acts of violence that could undermine the integrity of the election or destabilize the country. So they both welcome President Obama's video message.
Well, Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan is running for re-election against former military ruler Muhammad Buhari. Mr. Jonathan's PDP party has won every national election in Nigeria since it returned to democracy in 1999. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas has become the first official candidate for the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Cruz will be part of what is expected to be a large field of Republican White House contenders. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has the story.
Ted Cruz made his presidential announcement Monday at the nation's largest Christian university, Liberty University, in Lynchburg, Virginia.
I believe in the power of millions of courageous conservatives rising up to reignite the promise of America. And that is why today I am announcing that I'm running for president of the United States.
Cruz said as president he would repeal President Barack Obama's health care law and abolish the Internal Revenue Service, the government's tax-collecting agency. On foreign policy, Cruz told the crowd that as president, he would, in his words, stand unapologetically with the nation of Israel, and he vowed to wage an aggressive military campaign against the Islamic State militant group.
Imagine a president who says we will stand up and defeat radical Islamic terrorism. And we will call it by its name.
More candidate announcements are expected in the next several weeks, beginning with Senator Rand Paul in early April. Democrats also expect Hillary Clinton to announce her candidacy perhaps as soon as next month. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has expressed regret for warning his supporters during his country's elections last week that Arab voters were heading to the polls in droves. Speaking on Monday to Israeli Arab community leaders at his residence in Jerusalem, Mr. Netanyahu said he recognizes that his comment hurt Israeli Arabs and it was not his intention to do so. Mr. Netanyahu apologized to the Israeli Arab dignitaries and received a warm applause in response. The Israeli Prime Minister also reiterated his criticism of what he calls foreign attempts to interfere in Israeli elections to try to oust his ruling nationalist government from power. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister said Monday that Arab states will take what he called necessary measures against Yemen's Houthi rebels if a peaceful solution cannot be found to their fight against the government of President Abdurrabbu Mansur Hadi. Saudi Foreign Minister Saad al-Faisal told reporters in Riyadh the Arab countries would try to protect the region from aggression and condemned what he said was Iranian interference in Yemen. March 23rd marks 1 year since the World Health Organization declared an Ebola outbreak in Guinea. More than a year after the first Ebola case was discovered in southeastern Guinea's forest region, the World Health Organization says the number of new reported cases in the country continues to increase. Jennifer Lazuda has more from Dakar.
The WHO says the week ending March 15th saw 95 new cases in Guinea, the highest weekly number since the end of last year. Spokesman Fode Tase Sila is with Guinea's National Coordination Unit for the Fight Against Ebola. He says today it is resistance that is preventing our teams from progressing and taking charge of this virus, so Ebola continues. He adds everyone needs to come together and each person must take responsibility to defend Guinea from an enemy that is touching everyone. Authorities in Guinea say they will prosecute anyone who is found hiding a possible Ebola case or anyone who is caught traveling to another part of the country without papers proving they are Ebola negative. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
And before we go, Ukraine has again accused pro-Russian separatists of violating a ceasefire agreement that the two sides signed in Minsk, Belarus last month, saying the rebels had fired rockets and artillery at Ukrainian military positions in eastern Ukraine. A Ukrainian spokesman said Monday that six soldiers were wounded in fighting over the previous 24 hours. That's it for International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Business News on the Voice of America. U.S. stocks edged lower Monday on the heels of strong gains in the prior week as investors weighed fluctuations in the dollar and its impact on other markets, including crude prices. Equity markets fluctuated between modest gains and slight losses, tracking the movement of energy stocks as crude oil prices were caught between the weakness in the U.S. dollar and concerns about oversupply. The action in the dollar has closely affected stocks of late as traders anticipated monetary policy tightening by the Federal Reserve sometime later this year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell almost 12 points to close at 18,116. The S&P 500 lost 3.68 points. It finished at 2104, and the NASDAQ composite was down 15 points. It closed at 5010. Slightly more Americans bought homes in February, but tight inventories, affordability problems, and a nasty weather pointed to sluggish sales in the coming few months. Sales of existing homes rose 1.2% last month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 4.88 million. That's a slight rebound after plunging in January, yet still underperforming by historical standards. The real estate market has hibernated through the first 2 months of 2015, creating the potential for a second straight year of weak buying activity. The company that made the bats for who's who of baseball greats, including Babe Ruth and Ted Williams, announced a deal Monday to sell its Louisville Slugger brand to rival Wilson's Sporting Goods for $70 million. Hillerich & Bradsby Company has made the iconic bats for more than 130 years, supplying the bats with that recognizable oval logo for generations of baseball players. That's Business News on the Voice of America. It's probably no surprise that high tech has found its way to test cheating. Two Maryland high school students have been accused of using Twitter to cheat on state standardized tests. A security firm hired by the test company to search social media, including Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, found two instances of cheating by 10th graders. 10th grade students, they were discovered quickly and taken down from Twitter. No word on how they performed on their test.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Dogs have been called man's best friend, but communication between the species is limited because dogs can't talk. However, researchers have developed a sensitive computer interface that improves two-way communication between a dog and his handler. VOA's Jessica Berman is in the cafe with a story of a device that has applications for everything from search and rescue dogs to training household pets.
A couple of dog lovers who happen to be scientists at North Carolina State University have figured out a way to communicate with dogs. It's not a verbal conversation. It's more tactile. They developed a comfortable harness with a small computer mounted on it that allows dog owners to detect from a distance what Fido is doing and feeling, according to David Roberts.
This involves outfitting this harness with a bunch of sensors that are dedicated to monitoring the environment that the dog is in, as well as monitoring the dog itself, and then also being able to send inputs back to the dog via haptics, so gentle vibrations, much like you would feel when your cell phone goes off in your pocket.
The harness, which can record a dog's heartbeat and temperature and measure its activity level, is controlled wirelessly through a cell phone app. Roberts, a mathematician and computer scientist at NC State, says the device runs two programs and has a number of potential applications. One is to use it with service dogs that guide sight-impaired people. These dogs, says Roberts, are particularly vulnerable to stress, even though they're trained to remain very calm. The high-tech harness can also be used on search and rescue dogs and military dogs trained to locate explosives.
They're running out and they catch a whiff of something, they could be out at several hundred yards working away from the handler, and the handler could get a little beep on a handheld device saying, hey, your dog is on some scent.
The beep on a cell phone tells the handler that a dog has laid down in front of a scent, as they are trained to do. The harness can be customized with environmental sensors that can detect hazards such as gas leaks, as well as a camera and microphone for collecting additional information. Haptic vibrations can also send precisely timed signals from the handler to help train a dog. Roberts and his colleagues are in the process of miniaturizing the computer and improving the physiological sensors so the harness can be used in animal shelters and hospitals. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Fossils from California's La Brea tar pits keep supplying scientists with excellent material for studying the region's past. Ancient animals, from mammoths to tiny insects, reveal facts about climate changes during the last ice age and help scientists understand the modern climate. VOA's George Pudich is here in the cafe with us.
For millennia, natural tar that seeped from the ground in what is now Southern California trapped large and small animals, preserving their fossils and providing scientists with a trove of specimens suitable for study. A researcher at La Brea Tar Pits Museum, Anna Holden, is analyzing fossilized bees to learn about the ancient environment.
I'm trying to reconstruct what the climate was like and also what the local habitat. But this bee offered kind of unprecedented information in a way.
Exposing the fossils in a micro CT scanner, scientists discovered that the bee's habitat was warmer than expected, which led them to conclude that at the end of the Ice Age, about 11,500 years ago, this area was not covered with snow and ice as previously thought. Holden says that unlike the large mammals that came to La Brea from South America or across the Bering Strait, insects' limited range allows the collection of detailed information about their immediate environment. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Please join us every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Do you play a sport? Have you ever tried to improve your tennis game or your golf swing, maybe your free throw shot or even your ski technique? Do you think that having a virtual coach could help? Well, some inventors in Britain think that they have just the product to help you, smart clothing. These inventors have come up with a fabric called XL Flex, which has super fine fiber optic thread sewn right into the garment. That allows the clothes to measure what your body is doing and record it so a computer program can tell you how to improve your performance. Martin Brock is the inventor of XL Flex.
So XL Flex is a breakthrough sensing technology based on optical fibers, where the optical fiber is actually integrated into the garment. And really, it behaves like any other thread in that garment, so there's no compromise between having a sensor that gives you feedback on your motion or your performance and having some clothing that is comfortable and elegant and wearable as part of your everyday activities.
Unlike other attempts at smart fabrics, which had multiple electronic sensors which were bulky and sensitive to moisture, XL Flex uses a strong fiber optic thread and only a small credit card-sized electronic pack to record your movements. The fiber optics are sensitive to your body's position and can provide feedback without weighing you down with heavy sensors. Martin Brock says that the lightweight design also allows clothes to be both comfortable and stylish.
We're trying to measure the stretching of the optical fiber, and we do that in a very low-cost way here by measuring changing in the bending of the fiber. So what you can see here on the sensor region is that we've got a number of small bends in the fiber. And as I flex my joint there, it changes how much that optical fiber is bent. And as that bending changes, the properties of the light in the optical fiber change so that more light is scattered back towards the source. And we pick up on that extra scattering, and that allows us to measure how much that joint's bent.
Algorithms turn the results from the sensors in the clothing into feedback that wearers can use. It might help you correct your posture, tell you to use more or less wrist or shoulder motion, or to turn your hips. So let's say you spend some money on a tennis lesson and are wearing the XL Flex garment. Well, this program can tell you if you're following the pro's instructions or, as Martin Brock says, falling into your old habits.
At the most basic level, what we're doing is measuring joint angles. That in itself is not useful because you don't want to know that you've bent your wrist through 37 degrees. You want some more useful feedback. So what we then do is process those raw joint motions into something that gives intelligent feedback, acting like a virtual coach to improve your technique, or just allowing you to record your body motion during a training session with a coach and then compare what you're doing a couple of weeks later to what you were taught to do to see whether you've lapsed back into your old bad habits or not.
Duncan Smith is the head of products and systems at Cambridge Consultants. He says that XL Flex is a major step forward for sportswear companies and for athletes.
So XL Flex represents a major step forward in wearable technology because it's truly wearable. The sensor is actually built into the fabric, so you're able to design clothes that have this sensor built into them. This means that fashion designers can design the clothes rather than technologists designing wearable technology that's just a wristband or something like that, and that's a big step forward.
Now, wearing this fabric won't turn you into Rafael Nadal on the tennis court or Rory McIlroy on the golf course, and it won't make you ski like Lindsey Vonn or play basketball like Kevin Durant. But it might help you improve your game. The developers say that the technology is now advanced enough that they are working with fashion and design companies to come up with sports clothing that incorporates XL Flex. So what do you think? Would you wear a garment that could tell you where and how to improve your game? How much do you think that something like that is worth? Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email your questions or comments to us at voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
if you happen to be in Northwest England and you run across some rather large snakes, don't worry too much. British police say they are hunting for thieves who broke into an apartment there and stole 38 royal python snakes. They are non-venomous. The two men were spotted leaving the scene carrying two sacks, presumably with the snakes inside. According to a website for royal python keepers, the snakes can get up to a meter and a half long. They make great pets, they say. Police say, though, they're extremely unlikely to pose any threat. Time for sports on The Voice of America. I'm Jim Stevenson. At this time yesterday, we mentioned a tennis final at Indian Wells, California that was about to take place, and we expected it to be an epic battle between Serb Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer of Switzerland. It was. Craig Gabriel has an epic wrap of the match.
Novak Djokovic has won his 50th career title in a record-equaling fourth crown at Indian Wells in a stunning contest. Djokovic defeated Roger Federer 6-3, 6-7, 6-2 in 2 hours 17 minutes. Djokovic was within striking range of a straight set win, but Federer played some glorious tennis to forge his way back.
You miss a couple of shots, which you shouldn't, and then maybe I didn't serve as good as I should have, and then that's all Novak needs, and then he doesn't blink, you know. So it's pretty quick. You know, if you lose 6-2 or 6-3 in the third, that doesn't matter. For me, the problem was to be broken, being up 40-15 on my serve. That was the disappointing part. So, but you know what? I'm not going to look back on that match, on that moment, very long. That will be forgotten, like, probably in, like, 25 minutes or so.
Djokovic was getting frustrated. The chances were slipping by, but he regrouped in the decider and kept the pressure going. Federer rallied from a breakdown in the third, but then double-faulted to lose serve, and from then Djokovic's spirits lifted as he closed it out.
Well, I thought overall it was a great match for my side. Very solid, great intensity, great commitment to hit every ball, and I was very focused in the present moment, and I thought set in a break, and it was a break point for 5-2 up. I thought I could have done the job earlier, but credit to Roger for fighting through, and he's showing why showed again why he's a competitor and champion, somebody that never gives up.
It was one of the year's best matches, and he earned over $900,000. Craig Gabriel for VOA Sports, Indian Wells.
As the NCAA tournament reaches the Sweet 16 round, there are only 15 games remaining to decide a national champion in U.S. college basketball. Kentucky needs to win four of those games to become the first undefeated champion since Indiana in 1976. The Wildcats improving to 36-0. That's the best start to a season for any team. That's a look at sports on VOA. I'm Jim Stevenson with music on VOA Global. It seems the Princeton Review Test Preparation Company misquoted Taylor Swift's 15 in their materials for an SAT practice test. Even worse, they misquoted Swift and then criticized her allegedly bad grammar, despite the fact that they had messed up her words in the first place. A page in the practice test quotes Swift as singing, "Somebody tells you they love you, you gotta believe M." That's apostrophe E-M. The actual line is, "Somebody tells you they love you, you're going to believe them." The actual lyric is not grammatically incorrect. Listen for it yourself and see what you think.
You take a deep breath and you walk through the doors. It's the morning of your very first day. You say hi to your friends you ain't seen in a while. Try and stay out of everybody's way. It's your freshman year and you're gonna be here for the next 4 years in this town. Hoping none of those senior boys will wink at you and say, "Somebody tells you they love you."
Taylor Swift and 15. Did you catch the lyric in there? A fan called Taylor's attention to the Princeton Review's gaffe. Swift's response came on Tumblr. She said it was tough but fair. Not the right lyrics at all. Psh, she writes, you had one job. Test people. One job. Well, I guess now they'll listen to the music as well. Taylor Swift on VOA Global. Well, you may recall we've told you that the city of Boston has had a rather tough winter. A lot of snow. In fact, a record amount of snow. And in Boston, a person has been running around in costume, became to be known as the Boston Yeti. He's now using his newfound notoriety to help some fellow furry friends. The abominable snowman gained a huge following on social media during Boston's epic winter by running around the city in costume, stopping to help dig out stranded drivers. Now the unidentified prankster is selling Yeti swag, but to raise money for the Massachusetts Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. All of the proceeds from the sales of stickers and buttons and bookmarks will be benefiting the MSPCA's Angel Animal Medical Center in Boston. The Yeti is technologically savvy. He's able to email the Associated Press and said, I can think of no better way to spin one's popularity than for the benefit of animals in need. Now, this swag is illustrated with the quirky line of drawings of the Yeti by Rhode Island-based artist Jeff Smith. MSPCA spokesman Rob Halpin says the animal welfare organization is very grateful for all the help. He said, blizzard after blizzard, the Yeti was a constant source of amusement and mystery for everybody just to get through the winter. He says it's wonderful that the Yeti would surface in the spring and aid his fellow four-legged friends who are in shelters. Well, I thought the Yeti was two-legged, but okay. Time for us to melt into the sunset, as it were, as our program is coming to an end. We thank Tracy Carter, our director, engineer Zahrat Abzaid, and managing editor Diane Gal. I'm Jim Stevenson. We'll join you right back here again tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global.